Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. It's turned out to be a gorgeous afternoon. So hope everybody doing well. It's pretty steamy, though. Pretty steamy. We've had an awful lot of rain over the last few days. So it is the way you normally expect the end of July to be. Welcome into The Drive on this Tuesday. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and we're joined by the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I think we've got some rain on the way, too, by the way.
It looks like the next couple of days.
Yeah.
We've got a good bit more coming. I don't have a problem with that. That's less watering things. You know, one of the things that is not fun to do. Not that yard work after the grass grows is that much fun either. But I'd prefer that to drought. So we were just talking here a little bit before we came on the air. You had a quick trip out to Texas, where SEC Media Days were going on last week.
Yeah, we had two ambush events on Wednesday. And the first one was a lunch event in Houston at the Houston Racquet Club, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had an evening event at the Arts District Mansion in Dallas, downtown Dallas.
Wow.
Really beautiful location.
That's pretty stylish.
It was a beautiful, what had to be a mansion at one point that has turned into an event center. And both events were sellouts.
Great.
And we had John Cohen, Hugh Freeze, Bruce Pearl, Nick Kleinerd, Jessica Braswell, and Leroy Burrell.
Oh, wow.
Leroy still has a home in Houston. His mother still lives there, and he mm-hmm. was down. They were affected by the hurricane recently, and he's trying to get everything together there. He had a bunch of trees down, apparently, in the backyard of his home there in Houston. And so he met us at the airport in Sugar Land. That's where we flew in and out of. And so then he joined us there and then went with us to Dallas for the event there. So we had a huge panel, really good event at both places. And, it was a good day with the Auburn family there. And then Coach Freeze then stayed the night, spent the night.
Right.
And then Thursday, of course, was his day with you, Dan, at Media Days in Dallas. I was not a part of SEC Media Days this year. I'm told that in spite of the fact it was in Dallas and quite a bit away for a lot of us, it was really run very, very well. At the Omni down in Dallas. Now you were there. You can give us firsthand.
Yeah, I thought it was a beautiful event. I thought they really did a good job, you know, trying to accommodate everybody. You could tell that there were, you know, we sort of speculated on maybe you move it between the east and the west of the conference now, because it did seem sort of pronounced that there were some beats, including Auburn, that just didn't send that many members of the media for one reason or another. Not just Auburn, Florida. You know, there were times when the Florida players took the stage in the small room, and it was low single digits. You know, the media seated to ask questions. Kentucky going along with Auburn, same time. You got the sense there weren't all that many Kentucky. Now there were very well represented beats as well, as you can imagine. Texas, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, a lot of Arkansas coming down to Dallas. So I mean, it seemed very easy for that side of the conference to cover it. And I wonder if next year it's going to Atlanta,
right?
You know, maybe you bounce them back and forth between different sides of the Mississippi River or something, maybe could be the new strategy.
And now you can cover a lot of media days in your house or your office or wherever. I mean, because it's broadcast on the SEC network, there are different Zooms, and so there are ways to cover it without actually being there. I'm glad you got a chance to go. to Dallas. So we had a good day. It was a fun day. Flew in and out of Auburn, and was home by about 10:15 that night.
Wow, that's pretty nice.
That's not bad at all. We got back before the Microsoft crash.
I know Kirk. Yeah, I've been following the social media updates.
He's the one that I was Snapchatting with. He and his group were in the airport at Love Field forever, just trying to get back. And they were, of course, a few of many.
Oh, yeah.
That were affected by the security breach and everything that went with that.
That was Friday morning, right? And I mean, you had
there all day Friday.
Yeah, I mean, if we had tried to stay an extra night in Dallas and fly home
Dan was back. Dan was back. 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, we left. We left right after the show Thursday.
Good for you.
Jacob and I took turns driving. Yeah. Following the social media updates from Kirk. Yeah, he was at Love Field for much of Friday. Yeah. We think he's gotten home.
He has, and he's gone again. So there you go, Kirky.
I think he's gotten home, but no,
better take advantage while you can.
Exactly.
I thought the Auburn players did very well.
I did too.
At Media Days, Eugene Asante.
They looked good too, didn't they?
I thought Eugene Asante had, especially because even in Texas, I don't think anybody went all that unconventional with their fashion choices. Eugene going with the Ghana West Africa inspired attire as a nod to his family heritage.
I thought that was impactful. I really did,
and a stylish look too. I thought he pulled it off, and then Peyton and Keldrick looked extremely comfortable. And yeah.
It helps when you've got a tailored suit.
Yes,
that you're wearing. Have you ever had a tailored suit? I haven't.
No, the closest thing was like
not sure I want to tailor a suit to this body for a wedding.
It's the closest thing.
Right.
But it also helps if you have something better to tailor it to.
Right. Exactly.
Than we may have.
Right.
Anyway, I think the suit one of many reasons Peyton Thorne looked and felt confident up there. I mean, fact that he talked about having a full off season as the starting quarterback, and I think it was you that drew the Jason Campbell comparison.
That's not a prediction
that Auburn's going to go undefeated, but I mean I think there are similarities between the turbulence of previous seasons and what he's experienced this off season.
A week and a half ago, I spoke to the Birmingham War Eagle Club, in Hoover. And Stan White was there to help introduce me and to just be a part of that event. And Stan and I started our football careers at Auburn together in that he and I called games on CSS. He made the move into the radio booth, and then I joined him. And I just likened what Peyton Thorne has gone through. It's not exactly the same. Not only Jason Campbell, but Stan as well. I mean, Stan was a starter from his redshirt freshman season on.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't always go well for Stan.
There were a lot of callers back in the day people that thought, well, Stan can go ahead and move on, and thought the same thing about Jason.
My favorite call, and this is back in the day when we were doing pregame calls and postgame calls on the network.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy called, and I can't remember what season it was, of Stan's time at Auburn. And the guy called in, and I think he'd had a couple pops even before the game. And Paul Ellen, was the moderator. He was the host. And the guy said, if Stan White is a Heisman Trophy candidate and Pat Sullivan is a great quarterback coach, then I am a fighter pilot. And Paul, without hesitation, said, well, good luck in your next career.
And we on your next mission. It should have been like, well, yeah.
Mayday.
Good luck on the next mission. Yeah.
Anyway, but those two guys, both Stan and Jason, and I'm not saying that Peyton is going to lead Auburn to an undefeated season. I don't know what this season is going to hold. But both of those guys had rocky times at Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time their senior year rolled around, and Jason had four different coordinators, including Al Borges, in his last year, and then what did they do in their senior seasons? Boy, they were fabulous for all, and I hope that's the case for Peyton. I think going through a full year at Auburn, including last season, and going through spring ball this year with the new staff will benefit Peyton, because it wasn't, I mean, a year ago, he's just on campus. You know, it was June when he gets to campus.
Right, it's summer.
He did not go through spring. So
and Dan mentioned yesterday, which quarterback did you say was talking about someone who had arrived on campus in January?
Yeah, Shapen, the new Mississippi State quarterback, said a couple of things at Media Days about, you know, the thought of trying to I mean, he knew when he was going to transfer away from Baylor, he knew he wanted to be on campus at his new school in January, because the thought of missing those spring reps and trying to acclimate yourself in May or June to a new team and a new offense and a new conference, like, that challenge just seemed, even for a guy who's won a Big 12 title before, like, he thought that was putting way too much on yourself in a short period of time. And that's what Peyton Thorne, I mean, that's the story of Peyton Thorne's 2023.
Well, it's very, I mean, I'd liken it to the days before you could take anything online. If you had to take a class just by reading the book and not being around, listening to the lectures, seeing the lectures, or being a part of the class that is learning the material, just trying to do it on your own. It's very difficult. And I think a lot of people just expect, you know, well, a player that has experience is going to show up and there shouldn't be any problem. But there's an awful lot to acclimating to a new system, a new staff, a new personnel that you're playing with.
Well, and he's acclimating now to his second coordinator in 2 years at Auburn. I do think it is more to the head coach's liking, this coaching staff.
I think it's also more to what Peyton Thorne was comfortable doing at Michigan State.
And I think, and we've this is not earth-shattering new. He has more weapons.
Oh, no doubt.
I mean, that wide receiver room is much better than it was a year ago, even with three true freshmen that Auburn's going to count on a great deal. But when you have an entire tight end room back, including a guy that was basically ignored at Media Days in Rivaldo Fairweather, use that to your advantage, young man. A better offensive line, almost intact tailback room, other than, of course, Brian Battee. And the news about Brian, just as far as his health, it's encouraging.
Tremendous. Yeah. It is just wonderful.
So, listen, I don't know. I don't know what this offense is going to be like. We won't know for a couple weeks, probably, what this offense is going to be like. But I believe that this offense has the opportunity, has the chance to be significantly better. And that includes Peyton Thorne than it was a year ago.
I mean, it's a pretty dramatic – I mean, you can focus on any one receiver, but it's a pretty dramatic reshaping of that room alone, right? I mean, you have two receivers that were on the team when last season ended that are still around.
And they weren't – I mean, and you know, those weren't the most prominent guys on the roster last year. But
no, and one of them had just arrived, right?
Right, one of them was coming in and had – redshirted his freshman year at Ohio State.
So. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's another guy that takes a step forward. I mean, he's kind of a guy that we've forgotten because we pay so much attention to Bryce Kane and Perry Thompson and Cam Coleman, and rightly so. I mean, those are the three best wide receivers that Auburn has brought in as true freshmen in a long, long time.
And Andy, I have some people that say Malcolm Simmons is really, really impressing this summer as well. And then you've got the three veteran transfers.
Exactly.
That's what makes the room even more impressive is you're not having to rely on just the true freshmen. You have two transfers who were here in the spring, and then you add Penn State's top receiver from a year ago on top of that.
That room itself is dramatically better than it was a year ago. Mm-hmm. Dramatically better. Before Auburn takes its first snap against Alabama A&M on August 31st.
Andy Burcham with us here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Love for you to join in. You can do so by calling The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number is 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Just underway here on the Tuesday Drive. Come on in and join us.
As a second gen,
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. 19 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Andy Burcham, voice of the Tigers, got Drew at the controls. Love for you to join in. You heard the numbers, 334-321-1390 or text us at 334-564-1840. Hard to believe. I mean, here we are 8 days, is it? Yeah, 9 days until the start of football practice. Auburn has its huge Big Cat weekend coming up this weekend. Summer's just about over, Andy.
I am. The last 2 weeks, my schedule has filled up considerably.
Just
in speaking engagements and radio. I was on with Toby Rowland, who's the play-by-play voice at Oklahoma this morning. And so, the summer's gone. It's over.
It is. It's cool. Speaking of Oklahoma, I mean, it's that is probably the it is the sexiest game on Auburn's home schedule this year.
It is, and it is a significant game for Oklahoma, and it's Oklahoma's first road game in the SEC.
Absolutely.
So that one of the first five that Auburn plays, that is probably the most noteworthy at this point.
Unless you lose one of the others. But probably makes it more noteworthy.
I wasn't done yet. After the Alabama A&M game, don't overlook the Cal game at this point. What will we learn with Alabama A&M in town? I mean, you want to execute, you want to stay healthy.
Right, and if you don't, I mean, things like that happen against teams like that because it's very, very hard to have young guys focus on a game that as your opener.
Yeah, the first five will be a grind, to be sure. And then Auburn's not at home until November.
Mm-hmm.
So, and talking with John Cohen about just that five-game conference schedule, or that five-game open at home, that was not Auburn's choice to play five straight home games to open the season. Auburn has its non-conference opponents. Of course, the league sends out the conference schedule. Mm-hmm. Where they come in the season basically is up to the SEC. And as it turned out, with Oklahoma and Texas joining the league, I think that kind of threw everything into a bit of a
Because Auburn doesn't have a non-conference opponent in October when they're on the road for the entire month.
Exactly. You got an off date. You got an open date, but that schedule picks up on the – it's not ideal. We all know that. I think it will even out. And then what happens if the league goes to a 9-game conference schedule in a couple of years when the league and ESPN agree to whatever money that will require?
Three straight conference road games is not something that you'd probably want, regardless of who you're playing in that stretch. I feel like any adjustment you make to Auburn's schedule, like I don't know if you necessarily want to play a conference road game the week before Oklahoma comes to town either. Like if you were to swap the Arkansas game for one of Auburn's road games, I don't know if you're necessarily making the schedule easier by taking one of the three road games in that stretch and putting it in week four instead of hosting Arkansas or something like that. So it's like no matter what, you would run into a situation where
if you could swap, if you could swap the Kentucky and Vandy games,
You could play a home game a little bit earlier.
If you had, road game, open date, road game, home game, road game. That would be better than the road game, open date, road game, road game.
Vandy would be the trade to make
if you could have swapped when you played Kentucky and Vandy, it would have made it seem a whole lot more reasonable. As it is, we've talked about this, Andy, it is not the worst schedule that Auburn has faced. And when you look at Auburn's schedule in comparison to the rest of the league, it is probably fairer than it has been most years for Auburn.
Agreed. It's just five straight to start the year, then a full month on the road, and that's not ideal. The schedule itself is the schedule. You're not going, well, goodness gracious.
We got it. Yeah. Given to us
now,
this time.
Does include Alabama, Georgia on the road. And that's, at least at this point, you're going to see that every other year in the SEC for Auburn. Now, maybe one day that we figure out a way to separate those two, and like it used to be in the old days, where you played one at home and one on the road every year.
Well, it's but somebody, I don't remember if it was Jason or Philip or somebody, just wrote something about that in the last couple of days. You know, is there an
appetite?
As aggravating as that might be, would Auburn have been in the national championship game in 2013 had they not been able to play both Georgia and Alabama at home?
No.
Probably not.
No, probably not. I mean, it worked then.
It's very difficult in the even years.
Well, for three quarters, they were a lot better than Georgia on any field,
yeah,
right?
That's true.
And then that fourth quarter, you know.
I think, well, listen, we don't know what's going to happen. That may not ever happen, that where we get back to where you're playing one at home.
I like the fact that if you're going to play them both, either at home or on the road, they're separated.
Do you get
that sense? That is much better, at least if you're going
to
do that.
Right. Do you get the sense that internally at Auburn there's a desire to move those two games?
I don't hear that as much internally as I do from outside
fans.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
Well, especially if the trade-off is you have to play back-to-back road games.
I think now this is just my guess. To do that, you're going to have to play Georgia twice.
There
in Athens, back to back years.
Yeah, because they played.
They
played
back to back. Remember that. I remember that. Georgia did that back to back years here. I think Auburn's going to have to return the favor.
Yeah,
it's only fair.
The fact that Auburn did it a decade ago, I feel like would be little consolation to Hugh Freeze when you tell him that news.
If you
tell him that one of your home games against Georgia has been turned into a game in Athens. No, but you mentioned the Cal game, and I think Cal and Arkansas. We talked about this a little bit yesterday. The Cal and Arkansas games are both. And not to disregard the other two,
they're very very
the two
much
games in that in
must
that,
win
in that first four.
Agreed.
But Cal and Arkansas are so vital because if you were to stumble in one of those two games, you were to blow a tire in one of those two games, or if you were to if a better team were to come in and beat you in one of those two games, it reframes the rest of the schedule and how Auburn gets to improvement over last year's record. If they were to lose one of those two games, suddenly it becomes. Some games that you look at as swing games or hinge games become games that Auburn really needs in that situation.
Listen, a year ago, Auburn comes within and should have beaten Alabama here. Could have beaten Georgia here.
Mm-hmm.
Never should have lost to New Mexico State here. Right?
Right.
We have seen what Auburn can do. We've also seen when an opponent can come in and do as well. You do not want that this year. You do not want a New Mexico State game year. To me, that's the freshest in my mind, is that New Mexico State game of a year ago. Not necessarily the bitter disappointment of Alabama-Georgia, and Auburn played those two teams as well as just about anybody did all year long, and that's one of the reasons that Kirby Smart went on as long as he did in front of all of the media in Dallas talking about how tough it is to play at Auburn, right?
That's right. I mean,
yeah.
Carson Beck, too.
Yeah.
Carson Beck was asked a couple of questions about that. I think some of that was because people noticed how many Jordan Hare Stadium quotes there were coming out of SEC Media Days. There were a couple of questions consistently in the small room to players that were going to play in Bryant-Denny this year, sort of asking them about their experiences at Jordan Hare. Carson Beck and the Georgia players, one of them, because I mean Carson Beck will readily tell you, like, that's the toughest road game he played last season and the toughest environment he faced last season. And I think his production in that game would indicate that he struggled more that day than he did in just about any road game he played last season. We'll see what happens when a new crop of players, including Jackson Arnold in Oklahoma, a quarterback who's one of those wild cards, fewer than 70 career pass attempts for Jackson Arnold, and he comes in, his first road start will be at Jordan Hare Stadium in week 5 with that new look Oklahoma offense.
Andy, one of the things, just sitting here and watching and then being involved in a Zoom, we had an opportunity for those of the media that didn't go to Dallas to talk with Hugh Freeze as well. I've said it a couple of times since then, but I mean, you were there with him in Houston and Dallas and have been a few times. I think he's pretty comfortable, confident. I wouldn't say cocky or anything, but feels much better about the situation that he has with his team heading into fall practice.
No question. No question about it. Now, listen, I've not seen a cocky Hugh Freeze since he's been at Auburn. I don't I think he's pretty transparent.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes maybe too transparent, frankly. Anyway, I'll leave that alone. I think
he doesn't seem uncomfortable, but that doesn't necessarily read as cockiness to me. You know what I mean?
No. I agree. I think he is confident that this is going to be a better football team this year. He's got to get to practice now. We've got to get to two-a-days or mm-hmm. fall camp is a better way to – it's not two-a-days anymore. Not like it used to be.
No, three-a-days.
Right, exactly. But I think he's answered as many questions as he can at this point. And probably right now his idea about this football season is this weekend with Big Cat Weekend coming mm-hmm. up. And then right after, just on the heels of that is the start of fall camp. To me, and he talked about this at both places last week, and probably with you guys as well. I think the big question mark for him is defense, and it's up front at this point. I think he likes where that offense is right now,
mm-hmm.
okay? And before that first practice, those first practices.
No, he feels much better about the offensive line. Right. Obviously, receivers, we've talked about running backs. Auburn's got a really good situation at running back and tight end. And Peyton Thorne's his guy. I mean, there's right. no question about that. Yes, defense and the players seem really excited about DJ Durkin. It's just, you know, answer some questions. Who can make the plays there upfront defensively? I like the linebackers.
I do too.
Secondary's got a lot of talent, but a lot of youth.
I like the linebackers. The question I have with linebacker is depth.
Right.
At this point.
What's different?
Added a couple of guys, though. Added a couple of transfers, so yep. you have four experienced linebackers now.
What's different about this offseason versus last offseason, right, is, I mean, like you guys said, the receivers and the defensive line, those are the positions where there's been a lot of roster turnover, and those we're seeing a lot of new faces. Mm-hmm. That was everywhere last spring, right?
I mean,
it feels like a storm blew in and blew through town.
You had
and
half
now,
the roster turnover.
There's less intrigue.
It's been about a quarter of the
roster. There are positions where there are a lot of new faces.
20 outgoing, 16 incoming. Last year it was 40 something of each.
Right. And how many of those incoming are receivers? Right. I mean, so it's like
most
receivers and defensive linemen.
Nearly half.
Pretty much all of them are defensive linemen and receivers, right? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a ton of new players on the defensive line. And so it would make sense that those would be the positions Hugh Freeze is more curious about than everywhere else, because that's where he's got new guys that he hasn't seen as much. You get the sense he likes what he's seen so far at receiver.
I think he's more comfortable with receiver than he is.
But it's
defensive front.
It's striking. Right, those are the positions where there's been a ton of turnover.
And when it comes to defense, listen, what is a Trill Carter, a Gage Keys, or Isaiah Rakes, or Philip Bleedy? I mean,
right?
How do those guys produce? He likes his talent at secondary. But mm-hmm. some of those guys haven't been in this role
right.
yet. I think he likes the talent. I think he has an idea about the talent, but it's a little bit unproven at this point. And one thing I don't think that Auburn can afford is an injury up front, or not up front, at the linebacker spot with those top two guys.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah. Eugene,
or at corner.
Exactly.
I think Colton Hood and Tyler Scott,
right.
I mean, going in the portal and getting hurt.
Agreed.
I would say there's also a ton of pressure on Keontae and Kane and Champ Anthony to stay healthy and stay available. Otherwise, you're leaning on someone you haven't really seen very much.
334-321-1390. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Hang on, Mitch. You will be up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill, Dan, Andy Burcham, Drew here at the controls, and right to the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Mitch is up first. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to comment a little bit on what Andy was. You guys were talking about a tailor-made suit. Well, I've got three tailor-made suits.
Good for you.
Well, I had the I was in Korea for a year, and outside of Osan is a lot of I guess they call them haberdasheries, and they can pretty much sew or make just about anything. I mean, even shoes. So yeah, I got a mess dress. My Air Force mess dress was tailor made. Even got my name inside of it. and I got some suits and some shoes, and so yeah, and I'm kind of a awkward sized person myself, kind of like Dan. I'm a little smaller than Dan, but
yeah, little.
So is everybody.
But yeah, tailor-made suits, you know, especially for, you know, someone that, you know, off the rack kind of person. I don't know if anybody's really off the rack.
Well, I hope there's the episode in MASH where where they get tailor-made suits, and the pinstripe, that one of them had the pinstripes were going sideways rather than up and down. I hope you didn't have that.
That's not flattering. If you could, flattering on me.
I guarantee you that.
I can tell you that. Yeah.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. He says he's a great tailor, but with a lousy sense of direction.
Exactly.
And they also went to Seoul and got Henry one for, you know, his final episode. But
okay.
I just wanted to comment on the whole tailor-made suit thing. You know, it's and I mean, I can actually still wear them because I've actually lost weight since I retired from the Air Force.
Well, that's the most impressive thing of all, right there. Nicely done.
Right. All right, guys, that's all I had. War Eagle.
All right, Mitch, good hearing from you. 334-321-1390. Terry is up next. Hey, Terry.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
Hey, Terry.
I thought I'd lost weight, but I looked behind me and found it.
Ba-dum-bum.
The quarterback of the team last year that gave Auburn the most embarrassing loss in Jordan-Hare history, and he had Vanderbilt now.
Yes, he is. Diego Pavia.
He's coming back. He's coming back to Jordan-Hare.
If, Andy, in your opinion, all of you guys' opinion, if Auburn gets a chance to take a shot in, will they?
Oh, I don't know.
What do you mean, like a dirty shot? No.
No, not a dirty shot.
Yeah, well, I would imagine if they have the chance to tackle him.
Yeah, if they got a chance to put him on the turf, you bet.
Yeah, they got a chance to do that with any quarterback.
As long as the rules don't change between now and November, I will imagine that Auburn players plan on tackling the quarterback as often as they can.
Because wasn't he the guy that actually picked up an Auburn player, slammed him in the ground last year?
It wasn't like a body slam that you'll see on AEW Dynamite, but it was like he got the better of a collision for sure.
We mean it was real then.
It's exactly right. It was unscripted.
Don't say that, Dan. Dan's headed there.
I understand it's simulated combat.
Are you going as a fan or someone in the media?
Both.
Yes.
Both. Okay. I've applied for
credentialing him.
So the wrestle buds will keep making the trip.
Okay. What does that pass look like? Is it a plastic pass with the name printed on, or?
You have a
lanyard.
I think it's a bit of a lanyard. You can use it as brass knuckles if you need to. You can put it on and
perfect
strike somebody with it.
I like that.
Dan, this would be an interesting story for you. Then I was on the scales when I was getting ready to work out at Gold's Gym in Birmingham.
Uh-huh.
And this voice from behind me said, "How the scales pretty accurate." I turned around. It was Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh wow! No. Stone Cold in the gym.
Man.
How big is he, Terry?
He was about 6'2", 6'3", probably. Really? About 230.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Mick Foley owned a gym down in Navarre for several years.
Is that right?
Mick Foley throughout the 90s, I guess, settled in. I guess the way it was explained to me was several of the late 80s, early 90s WCW guys, they had to work out of Atlanta, so a lot of them would own property on the Florida Panhandle and make either the puddle jumper from Fort Walton Beach to Atlanta for their trips, or they would just make the drive. And back in the 80s, early 90s, the secret wasn't out about Northwest Florida beaches, and I think some of them have done pretty well selling those houses
for
people who have moved in the last couple of years.
Well, that Gold's Gym I used to work at was out there by the interstate, so a lot of the wrestlers, when they were in town, that's where they would come in and work out, so I got to visually see a lot of them.
And of course, if we're talking regional wrestling, Bill, I mean, shout out Kaz, right? Shout out Bill Kazmaier. I was told he's still in the area. Yeah, guy who
is
guy,
that right?
That's what I was told. Okay. I haven't seen him. Yeah, shout out to Kaz if that's true.
And then Dan, I know one more thing for you. Dan, knew it came in that later that day. I was standing at the desk talking to the front desk girl. The Undertaker came in.
Gee, now that's a big.
And
dude.
He was about. Yeah, no, I'd say he was about 6'9".
Yeah, that's a big guy.
Yeah, he was huge. Appreciate it, guys. You have a great day.
It is interesting to see those guys, especially from that era, interviewed now.
Sure.
Because they're, just to listen to them, they're much more intelligent than they ever seemed at that time. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Well, they had their you know, the personalities that they had to portray.
Right. And the under, I mean, the guy who portrayed the brother of the Undertaker for a long time, Kane, that's Glenn Jacobs, mayor of Knoxville, Tennessee. The mayor of the mayor of Knoxville, considering either a gubernatorial or a Senate run in the state of Tennessee, but he's been the either a 2 or 3 term mayor of Knoxville and somebody who is who's popular within the within the greater Knoxville area.
Good for him.
How about that, huh? Yeah. You never know where these things are going to turn out.
Our conversations on Tuesday.
Well, yeah. Well,
tend to go in different directions.
Season hasn't started yet. That's right. Exactly right. Exactly. I mean, it's getting here. It's going to be here very soon. All right.
I'm curious. I'm curious if Andy's looking forward to the Olympics. He was just in Europe,
my wife and I watch the Olympics. Whether it's the Summer Olympics or the Winter Olympics, we watch it every night. Every time that we can do it, we get enthralled with it. And there are some intriguing stories. I love that the opening events, after the opening ceremony, we get to see Roddy Gaines, because Roddy Gaines is as good as there is as a commentator in any sport out there. The incredible passion that he has for that sport that he loves, and to get to talk to him about that, just it fascinates me. I mean, yes, this is someone so prominent in Auburn history, but what he has done as a commentator, I mean, he's as good as there is. He is as good as there is across the board in any sport, in my opinion, what Roddy Gaines does. Primarily what we see him at the Olympics, sometimes NCAAs and the qualifiers and that type of thing. I love watching and listening to Roddy and his passion for that sport.
Andy, I was just going to get you to we've talked a good bit and heard what Coach Freeze had to say at the Ambush, at least in Dallas, and then, of course, at SEC Media Days. Just some thoughts from some of the comments from John Cohen and the other participants.
Well, with John, a great deal of the questions to John regard NIL and what the future is. And to me, the one thing that I think his coaches tell him, including Hugh Freeze and Bruce Pearl, is where are the guardrails going to be when it comes to, you know, what are the limits?
Well, there aren't any right now.
I know, but I think we're going to see some. So, and Hugh Freeze has said, listen, it doesn't matter to me what they are, just as long as we know what it is, then we can move forward. That's a lot of the questions to John Cohen. I was with John today. We recorded a year end and a look ahead on the podcast. It goes out Monday, and we talk about NIL. We talk about what the accomplishments of Auburn this season. We talk about facilities and what's going on at Plainsman Park, what's going to be going on at Jordan-Hare Stadium and the arena. He talked about the need for upgrades at soccer, and there's definitely needs for upgrades, not only at soccer, but across the landscape in Auburn. How do you do that in a world where there are some hard decisions coming up? That was one of my questions to John. And then another was, and Bruce Pearl talked about it to a point, because nothing has been announced, but I mean, there are still two big non-conference games that we all kind of know about that have not been finalized yet that are on the horizon. We may know about one of them this week. And they're both non-conference, and they're both neutral site games.
Yeah, you know, one is going to – we do know that – I mean, we're expecting Auburn to be playing in Atlanta in the Hoopsgiving against
– exactly who that will be at this point. We haven't – yes.
Yeah.
Probably won't be Purdue. They're already on the schedule.
But there's another one that is likely to take place in the state of Texas. That's all I'll say at this point. So that's – and listen, all the seniors on that team – it's as tough a non-conference schedule as Auburn's had, period. When you consider all those teams, and Jacob was talking about that on the drive before we got on today, all those teams that Auburn could play in Maui, and all of these games take place away from Neville Arena this year. This is going to be a fascinating basketball team to watch with Jani Broome and Dylan Cardwell back and all the new guys that are J.P. Pegues that's going to be there. And then you've got the freshmen. It's going to be an interesting mix for visiting. But We've never seen a non-conference schedule in my in my time, Bill, and I know you
me. I can say I've never seen
and
one.
And the fact that like none of these teams are coming to Neville. Auburn's playing all these teams somewhere else.
Which might be part of the strategy because it factors in, you know, the home, away, and neutral are factored into quad one games.
Auburn, I think if you don't have as many seniors on this team as Auburn has, I'm not sure we see this kind of schedule.
No way. But
if you have a team that doesn't know what it is going into the season, knows that they have the chance to be special, then you'd be nervous about games
that
could
be crazy to
because you could damage their confidence in November and December.
And it's not the only team in the SEC that are feeling like that right now either, by the way. I mean, there are some teams out there. Two teams in this state, for that matter, feel pretty darn good about their rosters going into the season.
And that's why they should be
absolutely
the top two picks when it comes to basketball media days.
We'll see.
Yeah, I know, but I said should.
Yeah, you're right.
Yep. Andy, I know you've got to run.
My pleasure.
You mentioned your
– right now the podcast running this week is with Greg Williams, Auburn's equestrian coach emeritus, included in the first ever NCEA Hall of Fame class, who at one time quit Auburn to go rodeo.
I did not.
He dropped
out
of Auburn.
Know that.
He dropped out of Auburn to become a rodeo star. Came back, finished, and then the rest is history.
You know, I did the same thing.
Did you?
Yeah,
I was on the rodeo circuit.
I was back. Yeah, I was back. I was back after a couple hours. I was back after. Yeah,
but his story is this week. John Cohen coming up on Monday. The conversation I was talking about with Auburn's director of athletics, and then in the next 2 weeks after that, Jason Campbell talks about the 04 team, and Will Herring is coming in to give us a defensive look back at 20 years ago for that Auburn team that went undefeated and never got a chance to play for a national champion.
And then Tiger Talk's right around the corner.
August 19th is the first Tiger Talk. Mondays during football season this year out at Baumhauer's Victory Grill.
That's great. Andy, thanks so much.
My pleasure, guys.
You joining us.
All right.
All right, we will get to our final break of hour number one. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, our thanks to Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham. Hopefully you got a chance to hear that. If you missed any of it, definitely check out the podcast.
Podcast of the Drive, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to espnau.com and use the Podcast Center. Podcasts presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We will talk more about this with Jake Crane in hour number two, but some interesting, not terribly exciting news if you're an Auburn fan. That Caleb Jones posted on AuburnSports.com just before we came on the air. And it's about, we were talking yesterday with Brian Matthews about quarterbacks at Big Cat. Which quarterback's going to show up? That's going to tell a lot. Well, it looks right now that there will not be a 2025 quarterback prospect at Big Cat. Quarterback Deuce Knight will not be attending Big Cat. Apparently, KJ Lacy will not, nor will Juju Lewis. And yesterday we were talking about how that could impact Auburn's recruiting class as Hugh Freeze trying to add more top receivers as well. And a lot of the receivers want to see who their quarterback's going to be.
Right. It's sort of a holding pattern that you find yourself in. Now, I do think at the quarterback position in this day and age college football, you can survive without necessarily bringing in a high-quality quarterback out of high school because there are so many quarterbacks year in and year out available in the portal. That's not the plan.
You can, but it is tougher if you don't have someone who looks like the heir apparent. Who's going to be the quarterback while you're recruiting other high school athletes?
Yes, you would like to have you'd like to be coming out of every starting you'd like to come out of every cycle with a starting caliber prospect or somebody that you feel like could be the guy someday, and if Auburn if Auburn comes up empty in the 2025 class, that probably is not the that's not the plan that is looking for. Now, can you overcome coming up empty in the 2025 class at quarterback? Potentially. Like, you could still find ways to...
Yeah, and it's not a done deal. I mean, this doesn't mean Auburn won't get a quarterback for the 2025 class.
But it does seem like some of the top targets are maybe looking elsewhere.
Slipping away. Yeah. Yep. All right, we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. I mentioned Jake Crane coming up at the bottom of hour number two, but until then, we're wide open, so we'd love for you to join us.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. And we'd love for you to join us. You can call us on the Drive hotline, that number, 334-321-1390, and it's sponsored by Skybar.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
Hour number two of The Drive brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. Love for you to join in. We've got Jake Crane will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. We're open until then. As we're closing out hour number one, which once again, by the way, we had Andy Burcham, voice of the Auburn Tigers. Always, he's with us. Every Tuesday in hour number one. And when he's in town, he's here in the studio, and he was again today. Hopefully you had a chance to hear him.
And he's getting the board ready for...
He's got his depth chart, his color-coded depth chart, working on Auburn football as they get ready for the start of practice next Thursday.
Yeah, familiarizing himself with a roster that, even though it's not, hasn't quite turned over the way it did from 2022 to 2023, but there are a lot of new faces.
Well,
that Andy will need to know.
Auburn had
gave us the scoop on some names. You know, we learned Maousi is three syllables.
Dorian Maousi, the linebacker. He's got to get
really lean on the right, like Mbop by Hanson, right? You got to lean on the first, and then Ausi, and then out. So it's like that's how you
Maousi. And yeah, we were trying to see. We're not 100% sure on Auburn's latest addition, Fanage Gote, is what we're sticking with right now. The another linebacker. When we were talking about linebackers, I mean, Auburn has two transfer linebackers with Dorian Maousi and Fanage Gote, who came in from Maryland to go along now with Eugene Asante and Austin Keys. So you think about all four of the experienced linebackers are transfers.
All four of them are transfers, although Austin and Eugene are guys who aren't in their first season.
No, Eugene's in his third season at Auburn, and Austin's in his second.
Right, and I mean, a lot of the roster are guys who started their career somewhere else in college football and have now found their way to Auburn. That's becoming more common across college football in general, but I'd say it's probably – I can't imagine Auburn's ever had a team with more players who started their careers elsewhere than and that's everybody.
I doubt that there's any team in the country that's ever had – well, I don't know. Maybe some Jackie Sherrill teams with the junior college players.
Oh, maybe State had some,
maybe, but most teams probably have more transfers than they've ever had.
Especially of the transfer rules. If you limit it to guys who we're talking about started their career at the D1 level somewhere else. And not because a long time, I mean, not all that long ago, you didn't see all that much transferring at the D1 level because you had to sit out a year. That's gone now, so players are willing to move around and retain their eligibility, and Auburn has a lot of players at different positions. I mean, you think about Auburn, you just mentioned all four linebackers, your top two edges, McLeod and Kieron Crawford.
Your three experienced wide receivers.
Your entire defensive line, pretty much, except Geldrick and
the offensive line.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it is.
I mean, you have Jeremiah Wright has been at Auburn the entire time. Connor Lue has. He flipped. But he's been at Auburn
the entire time, which is 2 years,
which is last year.
Yeah, this is the second year. Tate Johnson has been here the entire time.
He has, but I'm just looking at the starters.
Sure,
you got three out of the five starters are transfers.
Three out of the five starters, and across. I mean, what most of your experienced receivers outside of Camden Brown, your top tight end.
Oh, yeah,
Rivaldo Fairweather. Your top option at tight end.
Your quarterback. Running back is the only spot.
Your top three options are guys in-house.
Yes.
Freshmen who signed with Auburn.
Guys that signed originally with Auburn.
Right, and it's a position Hugh Freeze has said, you know, there's not as much, and because of that and the fact that you didn't add to your running back room in a meaningful way in the off season, it's a position people haven't talked about as much as some of the others, and Hugh Freeze is. He's mentioned he's fine with that. Like he's fine with the running backs flying under the radar for now. Although Jarquez was picked first team in the SEC poll at media days, but he's fine with guys flying under the radar now because they are a group that he knows what he has in Hunter and Cobb and Alston, and I'm curious to see if it's a rotation between the three.
Yeah,
if one of them
committee?
Is it
going to be primarily Jarquez or what?
No, because I mean, you would think that Alston and Cobb are both guys who feel ready to step in, but they've got very good teammates and they can share the load.
Yeah, that will be interesting to see. But we were talking as we're going into the top. I mean, the next thing up, as Andy was saying, next thing up for Hugh Freeze is Big Cat Weekend, which is coming up this weekend. It is the dead period for recruiting ends tomorrow, and then players can start visiting. And Auburn looking for a very impressive group coming in this weekend. But it looks like there may not be a 2025 quarterback, at least one of the ones we've been hearing so much about. I mean, Auburn has been very heavily involved trying to flip a couple of quarterbacks. I mean, it seems like the focus had been on Juju Lewis, the longtime USC commit. That has sort of seemed to fade a little bit with the thoughts – K.J. Lacy, the Saraland quarterback who has been committed to Texas for a while, or Deuce Knight, the Mississippi product who's committed to Notre Dame.
If Auburn doesn't land a quarterback in the class of 2025, when would they notice? Like when would that absence be felt on the roster? Do you feel like
it might be felt in December at signing day? Mm. Because I mean you're trying to bring in some more top receivers, and you've got some young receivers that want to know who's going to be their quarterback next year. Now, I mean, if something were to happen and either, you know, Holden Garner or Walker White, Hank Brown stepped up and played very well and was the obvious quarterback for next year, that could take care of that. But, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wonder how Auburn fans really feel about this, because there's some that might feel, well, we need that for the future, but I would think that Hugh Freeze feels what they need right now is Peyton Thorne to be the Peyton Thorne that he was hoping when they brought him in from Michigan State. But what that does, that sets you up as well as possible for this year, but it gives you no idea who your quarterback's going to be in the future.
And I don't, I mean, even if, I mean, I can't imagine the plan would be for the 2025 signee to, you know, I mean, you would still think that it's,
no, but you want to have that,
the option.
Pied Piper, if you will, yeah. and someone that young players can be looking and saying, I've got a chance to be playing with this guy as a quarterback. I mean,
It could impact
maybe Walker White still has some of that cachet.
It could impact your ability to recruit other freshman receivers.
Yes.
If you're not like I get that. I would think that no matter what the plan is going to be, unless somebody other than Peyton Thorne takes hold of the job between now and the start and the end of the season, and they finish the season as your starting quarterback. Barring that happening, I would think that the competition is
you've got to get another transfer.
Whoever's still on the team and wants to go through spring and summer competing to be the starter. Whoever you sign out of the high school ranks, if you think they can be a starter immediately or compete to be a starter immediately, and then what you just said. I would think you would need to be in on one of the top transfer options on the board. And that would be the, unless you feel really good about your in-house option and you've seen them perform on the field. And then maybe you're saying, well, we've got something in-house that can, you know, we don't need to go try to make the splashiest possible, you know. We'll see the decision then, but I would think that the plan right now is to bring in, you know, this after this offseason, you would think that Auburn is going shopping in the portal market for a quarterback to at least compete to be,
yeah,
to be
what,
that starter, if not.
I would think the perfect scenario would be you sign a top 25 quarterback and you bring in the best 1 year guy that you can.
And you have your in-house options to compete to.
That would be the perfect scenario. I mean, that doesn't mean that's what you're going to get. The first thing you need to do is sign a top 25 quarterback.
Right.
Does it seem a little surprising that, I mean, Hugh Freeze, who's been so good at going out and being able to flip talent and upgrade the roster so well, is seemingly having a bit of trouble at the quarterback position.
It's a little surprising, especially because of the way he was able to convince receivers without them having to see it on the field first. But maybe quarterbacks are still apprehensive about what they're signing up for, and maybe they need to see a productive Auburn offense with Hugh Freeze before they commit to be the next quarterback in line. I don't know. I don't know what these guys. I don't know the mindset of these individual recruits and what Auburn is, what they're being pitched and how they feel about it. But I would think that maybe there's some apprehension because we haven't seen on the field, you haven't seen the blow away Hugh Freeze offense yet, mm-hmm. and maybe that's what it would take to convince a quarterback to take the plunge.
I mean, I this is way down the road, but it needs to. It really needs to step up. Because the other thing you've got to be concerned with is keeping the ones you've got, keeping the players that you have. You know, we've talked about how important it is in retaining players and re-recruiting your own players now that everybody has the ability to jump. I mean, if the offense struggles, you don't bring in a top 25 quarterback. There are no guarantees that you're going to have the players you're hoping to be returnees.
Right. I mean, every season now. I mean, it's one of the reasons why Hugh Freeze needs to avoid a sophomore slump on the field, because all of the gains that you've made the last couple of years, especially with players right out of high school, you have to re-recruit those players every mm-hmm. year now. And if Auburn's offense struggles this year, not only does it become harder to convince top receivers in the high school ranks to come join Auburn, but you have to worry about hanging on to the guys that you've landed the last couple of years and whether or not they'll be pursued and tempted to explore their options if the Auburn offense.
I can guarantee you they're going to be pursued.
Yeah, I you know what? They might be tempted if Auburn's offense isn't what they were expecting. So I think that's it's vitally important I think a letdown I want to be careful about this, but I think a disappointing second season and, you know, the comparisons as far as what the vibes are going to be like, you know, it's not overly triumphant regimes and administrations, right? You start using words like Napier to mm-hmm. talk about how things are going to feel, and it's not where you want to be going into year three if you're Hugh Freeze.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We need to get to our first break of hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Like the mighty Live Oak. Nick Hayes and his team.
At ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. And again, we enjoyed our time with Andy Burcham as usual today. Didn't get a chance to really get into baseball. We talked about a few of the sports. He talked some basketball. And, yes, we're still waiting for a couple of other opponents to be announced. They're not expected to lighten up the schedule for this year, let's put it that way, in basketball. Baseball.
But I don't think people would be terribly enthusiastic about hearing that Auburn's going to play some overmatched opponent in men's basketball, right? The games that move the needle are rumored games against, you know, consistent tournament teams and programs that have enjoyed success at the highest level. And it's more important than ever before to play those games away from home.
Absolutely. Because, look at Alabama last year, yeah, able to do that. And, I mean, Auburn's going to be playing quite a few teams that should be very good. I mean, well, last year, let's face it, last year, Bruce scheduled a lot of teams that had been in the tournament and that he expected to be in the tournament again last year, and they didn't make it.
Right, and they probably, in hindsight,
and more of them were at home.
Yeah, too. I think in hindsight, Bruce probably overloaded on non-conference home games, believing that you know, the value of doing that would especially winning them would help out. Instead, what happened was Auburn went pretty deep into the season before they picked up their first quad one win,
right,
in part because, yeah, some of the teams they counted on to be quad one type opponents, you know, just didn't live up to their end of the bargain. And some of it was because Auburn probably could have been a little more advantageous more ambitious with their out of conference scheduling. And they've absolutely done that with this group between Maui and Duke and the
Purdue
neutral site game against Purdue in Birmingham, and it sounds like they're not done.
No. As Andy was saying, I mean, Auburn's going to be in the hoops giving over in Atlanta, and that appears to be against a Big Ten team. There's a lot of talk about who that is, but nothing official yet. And as Andy said, Auburn also going to be playing a game out in Texas, and just waiting for that to be announced too. It's expected to be another very prominent team. But that gives you five or six big time quad one games away from Beard Eve. Away from the arena.
It was called a Beard Eve's there.
I did. I was like, Beard Eve's. It's like, wait,
it will,
right,
which it will be away.
Well, it's away from Beard Eve's. Away from Jordan Hare. Away from everything here in Auburn.
The new look, Plainsman Park.
Yeah, that's true. I wanted to get into that in a little bit, but I mean, with five or six games like that, if you only win a couple of them, it doesn't hurt you at all. It's actually, it's probably better to play those games and lose than it is to win against a lesser team at home, as far as in the eyes of the committee.
I mean, the question is a quad one loss more helpful than a quad four win, you know, in the eyes of the playoff committee, potentially.
Not if you're getting blown out every time.
No, but I mean,
you never win a quad one game.
But just in general, like if you could add a, I think it is interesting to think that, you know, the value of an overall quad one. I mean, because it reflects the number of quad one games you play. Is something that the committee takes into account. And so if you have a bunch of, I mean, not to mention that if you schedule that quad four game, you could also lose it, which would be
devastating.
But it's the thought of having a quad three or a quad four win versus the opportunity to pick up a quad one win, like it's a gamble worth taking in the eyes of Bruce Pearl.
And as we were talking a while ago, I mean, this is the kind of roster that you feel more comfortable making, you know, this kind of schedule with the experience, with the chemistry that's already there on this team, and then the players that Auburn's been able to add to the roster that they already had. You feel like you can take that chance. You can schedule these tough either neutral site or road games. So it should bode well for Auburn. Really excited. I mean, there's no reason to not be excited. As a matter of fact, I think we're coming up on the end of this month is the deadline for anyone who has had season basketball tickets and hasn't ordered them to go ahead and reorder, because there are plenty of people that would love to be able to snatch up any Auburn season tickets, which have sold out now for years since they've moved over to Auburn and then Neville Arena.
Oh, it's a it is a hot ticket. I mean, if you're trying, I can't imagine there will be that many season tickets available, because I imagine
there haven't been. I mean, there haven't been any available for years.
Sometimes I think about the people who gave theirs back in the fall of 2017, because there were a couple.
Yes, there were.
There were a couple of people who took Auburn up on the offer to it's like selling Apple stock in what, like 1997.
Yeah, we were talking about it with Mitch a while ago. But what it would have been like selling some property in Destin, 40 years ago.
Yeah, it would have been like having some waterfront property in the Florida Panhandle in the 80s or 90s. But it's it's remarkable the turnaround that Bruce Pearl has overseen, and maybe going into this season with. I mean, it could be his. I mean, the expectations could be as high as ever. Like this could be a team folks think can do everything that his previous teams have been able to do, and we'll see what it looks like when they're out there.
Yeah, no question. And then to baseball. Like I said, we didn't get a chance to talk baseball with Andy. I wondered if he's been by Plainsman Park lately. I haven't been by in a couple of weeks. Jason Caldwell will be on with us tomorrow. And Jason got some great shots, photo gallery of Plainsman Park that he put up today. And, man, I had only seen the infrastructure for a lot of the work down the first baseline, down toward the right field corner. And now it is really coming along. You can see from some of the pictures that Jason has taken, how dramatic this is going to be with, cover all the way from the from the right field corner down the third baseline. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I can remember doing games. I was doing play-by-play when Auburn only had a chicken wire backstop, and there were some wooden bleachers, just a couple of wooden bleachers on either side and another set out in center field. And that's all Auburn had. I mean, it was a big deal when Auburn added the aluminum bleachers and then some cover and a press box. But there really hasn't been much done in about 30 years at Plainsman Park. I mean, there have been some touch-ups and some renovations and things, but nothing really drastic in quite a while. And this is so impressive. It's going to I think really stand out. I also love the fact that Auburn has been able to keep its venues there for football, basketball, and baseball right there in that triangle. Even with I still wish something could be done with Beard Eaves, but to have the Neville Arena and Jordan-Hare Stadium and Plainsman Park. Right there was a move. Some people may not even realize this. I mean, there was a move back 30 years ago before the last big renovations were done there at Plainsman Park to move the baseball field out Wire Road.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Like where softball is now, like yes. by the well, actually, by Old Row or by New
probably
Row?
Probably along in there. Yes, okay. Somewhere along in there. Hmm. And, I mean, there was a thought that it might do. And fortunately, they were able to, nix that and keep everything right there in that triangle. Because I think it's cool. It is so cool. There aren't a lot of schools that have all that have their major sports venues right there. Obviously, you've got to go around the corner to get to softball, but I mean, it is great that they've been able to do that. So I'm really excited and looking forward to going by and looking forward to talking to Jason tomorrow when we have him on about the upgrades there at Plainsman Park and a little more about the additions to Auburn baseball's roster.
Yeah, I mean, seeing Kentucky's campus last month. I mean, they have a couple of the athletic complexes, softball, baseball, football are really close to each other.
But Rupp's not right
there. Rupp's downtown in Lexington and sort of away from everything else, imagining Auburn with the basketball arena downtown instead of on campus, you know, sort of paints it's a very different, picture. I guess if you were going to do that with one of the sports, that would be the one to try it with. Would be to try to move the basketball arena away from everything else. But I think in the case of the fields and the outdoor sports and stuff that's utilized a little bit more sparingly, I guess, like to have they use Rupp for arenas and concerts and stuff like that too. I mean, it's more of an event space in the city of Lexington than just the home. They also don't play women's basketball games there.
Right.
It's also just the home of the I think the only gym in the SEC that is exclusively that is not for both. I believe everyone else
doesn't
is.
Coleman does well no not women.
Yeah, I think there. I think everybody now is playing the men's and women's are sharing arenas except for the University of Kentucky in men's basketball. I know Memphis they're not in the league, but Memphis has a separate gym for women's basketball because they share the men's gym with the Grizzlies downtown. They play in the NBA mm-hmm. arena in town, but imagining the baseball renovations look great. Yeah, very different imagining of campus there if you think about moving some of that
well,
stuff.
Well, yeah, but I mean just when you came to school here, I mean that was just we go back to when there was nothing, like I said, but chicken wire backstop, and there was, you didn't have the monster, you didn't have so many different things, and I'm just really excited.
You didn't have some of those buildings that you can see behind it.
No, you're right, and you could drive on campus. All right, we will get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us on the other side, so stick with us as we continue with the Tuesday Drive.
Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon, 25 minutes away from 6 o'clock. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls, and let's get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. Welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, and that is Jake Crane. Jake, how you doing, man?
Man, I'm doing great, guys. It was good to see Dan out in Dallas for SEC Media Days, and I'm excited. We're getting close.
Jake, we hope we get to see you next year when the SEC Media Days moves to Atlanta.
A little closer.
Comes back to the College Football Hall of Fame. But no, I thought it was a great event in Texas last week.
Yeah, no, I thought they did about as good as a job as they possibly could have. I'd had never been to Dallas before, so like I said, Dan, when I went on with you, people ask about the fit of Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC. I mean, it's a perfect fit because they're as nuts as we are about this thing. So I thought that was just proven right once again. I mean, Bill, there were so many media outlets there. It's the biggest one I've ever seen. I had guys, that were from Big 12 affiliates coming up to me like, man, this is insane compared to Big 12 media days. So I thought it was eye-opening for a lot of people.
Yeah, I heard nothing but great reviews. I've seen nothing but great reviews from the job that was done by everybody out there in Dallas. So that's good. I mean, looking back on it, I mean, anything – I mean, we've seen the dog and pony show for years, but usually there are a few things that sort of might make you have a different perspective on things going in. Was there anything of that sort this time?
It was funny, Bill. Everybody tries to win media days by not losing it, right? You don't want to say the wrong thing, or you don't want to give anybody some bulletin board material, which is just motivation for preparation. Once the first snap happens, the bulletin board stuff kind of dies off. But no, I thought it was pretty kind of quiet. Lane Kiffin and Feinbaum kind of getting into a weird, awkward, deep down, I really hate you situation was interesting. But outside of a Mississippi State player talking about, them running the SIP and not Mississippi, there wasn't really anything that I thought you took away from it. Like, man, these two coaches hate each other, or this guy said this about a team that's a legit contender. So I thought it was actually pretty smooth.
Georgia picked to win the SEC by the media, getting a healthy share of the, 165 of the 200 votes or so that were cast. I don't even want to acknowledge the votes that people tossed towards South Carolina and Vanderbilt.
Two for Vandy,
yeah. One for South Carolina. Yeah,
exile.
Vandalism of the poll by these members of the media. But Vandyism. But it's Georgia and Texas picked to make the SEC championship game, with Georgia as your projected champion. The SEC email notes that the conference media has been right 9 of 32 times in picking the league's eventual...
And that's improved recently.
In the league's eventual champion. What do you think of the pick of Georgia to win the SEC this year, Jake?
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody's shocked. I mean, I could make the argument, and I thought this was probably the biggest headline I got out of the whole media days, was at the end of the day, you know, the parity at the top of the SEC. I've never seen more teams that I think have a chance to actually win the league than I do this year. So if you go by that formula, it's going to be a lot harder for the media to pick the champion. But, I mean, you look at Georgia, the schedule, nobody has a quote-unquote easy schedule. There's some that are harder than others. But when you just look at personnel, Georgia's got the best personnel in the SEC. They have, you know, you could say now that Nick Saban's gone, the best coaching staff probably in the Southeastern Conference, and they return important people at important positions, just like Carson Beck at quarterback. So it didn't shock me. I was more surprised that everybody was just kind of penciling in Texas to play them in the SEC championship game. I wouldn't be so quick to do that, not because Texas isn't very good, but this is your first. You can be the greatest hiker of all time, but if you've never been into Amazon, your first go at it is probably going to be a little rough. So I was a little surprised by that, but hey, we were in Dallas, guys. So, you know, at the end of the day, who's really shocked?
Well, I mean, I wonder how many people really sit down and they go, okay, here's Georgia's schedule. Let's go down. Let's see who all they're going to win, who all they're going to beat, who they'd lose to. Now those other teams, because Georgia goes on the road to the teams that are picked 2, 3, and 4. So they're not going to lose for them to win the conference. They're not going to lose 2 of those 3. They've got to win at least 2 of those 3. And that's giving losses to other teams that then can't afford to have other losses to finish 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah, well, I mean, Bill, you guys know this. If you go through 90% of those SEC schedules, you could about say the same thing for everybody. I mean, we're talking about Auburn having somewhat of an easier schedule than usual, and they got to go on the road to Bama, Georgia, and Missouri.
Right.
So it just, you know, any way you dial it up, it's not going to be an easy path. But if there's any team out there that is equipped from a starting talent standpoint and from a depth standpoint on the roster, who can go through the most attrition and still be okay, who still has a ton of upside, I mean, it's Georgia. So look, there, I don't think any SEC team is going undefeated during the regular season. I do believe that. I'm leaning more toward Ole Miss playing Georgia twice than Texas playing Georgia in the SEC championship.
Hmm. Yeah, it's an Ole Miss team that I think folks beyond Alabama, Georgia, and Texas, it's an Ole Miss team that people think can do some big things. I think that Georgia Ole Miss game. I mean, Georgia having road games in Austin, Tuscaloosa, and Oxford is just. I mean, for a team that's supposed to win the SEC, they probably need to win 2 of those 3 games to make the SEC championship game, don't they? I mean, I don't know if a 6-2 team, maybe a 6-2 team will be able to get in on tiebreakers. I think it's going to be real tough.
Yeah, yeah. Not that I think Georgia's, you know, going to lose more than one game right now, but I expect absolute carnage, you guys. I literally expect absolute carnage this year. I mean, I don't see there's, and we're talking about like the top dogs. I mean, think about teams that have to play Missouri, you know, and they have to play, you know, some of these teams that, you know, even Alabama, Tennessee, LSU. We don't know anything about Kentucky. There's just Oklahoma, right? There's just so many landmines. I would not be shocked at all if it came down to a 6-2 tiebreaker situation. I really wouldn't.
Yeah, well, you know, as I look at the schedules, I mean, Ole Miss – and Ole Miss, Texas, and Alabama don't play each other. I mean, they've got Georgia is the one. Georgia plays all three of them, and they've got you know, they don't have each other on the schedule. And as a matter of fact, Ole Miss and Texas don't play Missouri. Alabama's the only one of the three that even plays Missouri.
Well, if you look at Ole Miss and Missouri, there's so many similarities between not only what they did last year and what they returned, but their schedule, like you just brought up. So, again, I mean, would anybody be shocked if, like, you know, Missouri had another good year and went 10-2 in the regular season and lost two SEC regular season games and then was able to backdoor their way in the conference championship? I would not be shocked about that at all. That's why this year is as fascinating in the Southeastern Conference from a football standpoint as any that I can remember.
And I love the fact that there's no divisions and it's just going to be, all right, here we go.
We've got 16. It's great for everybody, Bill. Think about, God, if you're Penn State right now, you're the happiest person at the dance.
Well, I mean, the teams that experienced, I mean, I would think that Michigan and Ohio State probably like the existence of, you know, the dissolution of Division Play too, because it sets up the possibility of a rematch in the Big Ten championship game, which was something that couldn't happen in the past with Michigan and Ohio State. I mean, just last year, right? Ohio State was 11-1, lost to Michigan out of the playoffs because, you know, that's that, you know, one game ultimately decided it. I do wonder. We looked at it yesterday, Jake, and last year 10-2 Ole Miss would have been the last team in based on the way the polls shook out on Selection Sunday. 10-2 Oklahoma would have been out. 9-3 LSU would have been out. I also, you know, the scenario you're outlining there with the SEC championship game could also have big ramifications on who makes the new college football playoff.
No, well, that's why we keep talking about and why everybody keeps talking about, is it better if you're a team that ends up going 10-2 in the regular season to not play in the conference championship game? Because if the loser of that game has two losses, now they have three. If the loser of that game has three losses for some reason or somehow whatever, it's just advantageous because you almost get a built-in bye. So I hate that it may water down some people's thoughts of playing in the conference championship game. But I think it's better not only from getting a better champion out of it, but you get to basically play everybody now home and away over like a decent amount of time. We don't have to wait 30 years for somebody to play somebody somewhere. I think that's the best part of it.
All right, Jake, who's a player? I mean, how do you want to do this? Like, anything really surprise you from the first team, second team results? A player that you really felt strongly about your vote and maybe didn't, the media didn't share your opinions?
You know, I thought the Wilson kid from Florida didn't get the love that I thought he was going to get. I mean, when you look at that Florida team losing Ricky Pearsall and some of these, you know, other weapons, I think he has a chance to have a breakout year. He just needs a little bit of help around him and for Graham Mertz to play good again. But yeah, there's nothing that really just I looked at and was like, oh, my God, this is terrible. And I was interested to see that they called Texas TEX and Tennessee UT. I thought that was a little bit of a nod.
Yeah, Tennessee fans were thrilled with that. Auburn fans, bristling a little bit that Rivaldo didn't even make third team.
No, they'll know soon. They'll know soon. I can promise you that. The people on the outside, we talked about him a decent amount, and nobody's going to be happier about having weapons on the outside than Rivaldo Fairweather, because you can't double everybody, and he was our only hope in the passing game last year. Really.
No question about it. Hey,
I would think Peyton Thorne's probably in that category too. A guy's pretty happy to be
weapons on the outside. Probably together eating at Nippers right now, just talking about it.
Yeah, speaking of Auburn, I mean, huge weekend coming up, Big Cat weekend. It has been very productive for Auburn in the past, although it looks like they may not have any of their quarterback targets for 25 coming in this weekend. And we were talking about that a little while ago. That's not insignificant because Hugh Freeze needs to land a big-time 25 quarterback as he looks to try to reel in top receivers and other skilled players for the 25 class and beyond.
Yeah, look, I get, you know, people being kind of antsy about it, especially since Auburn didn't do anything through the portal, and you always want to sign a quarterback in the class. And again, remember, we do have the transfer portal. What I'm looking for is up front. That's what I'm looking for. Offensive line and defensive line. The rest to me is great. Obviously, quarterback. But I think Hugh Freeze will get that handled. Offensive line, defensive line. That's all I want for Christmas, Bill.
The more the merrier, too.
All of them. As many as humanly possible. We can worry about the rest later.
Talking with Jake Crane from Crane and Company here on the Tuesday edition of The Drive. And yeah, Jake, so who's you look around, is there somebody where you don't share the enthusiasm of the rest of the league as far as the vote? Is there somebody where maybe in your personal poll you had them ranked lower than the conventional wisdom or the rest of the rest of the media voted?
You know, I mean, obviously didn't bet on Vandy to win the conference. I promise you that. They need to find out who did that and ban them from the event. You know, I thought it was pretty fair ranking. Again, everybody's going to be high on Texas. It's their first year coming to the league. Media Days in Dallas. Everybody was juiced up on Texas barbecue and all that stuff. You know, there wasn't really anything that stood out to me as just absolutely abhorrent. I think Florida's more interesting than what people are giving them credit for. The problem is, and by interesting, I mean, I think they're a better team than what a lot of people think. Overall, I think they you know, think that they just have a bad roster and don't have any good players. I promise you, they may have the best D-line in the SEC. Just remember I said that. But, you know, their schedule is just so brutal, guys. Like, well, one of the main things we were talking about all week on Crane & Company up there was, like, what's the number that keeps Billy with this schedule? Because the problem is, if you go 6-6 and you fire Billy Napier, the next year you basically have the same schedule. It's just split.
Right.
You're going to get your roster gutted by everybody else through the transfer portal, including and very possibly DJ Lagway, who is your future at quarterback, and the kid's a stud. I just, like, what's the number that doesn't get him fired? You know, that we kind of bounce that ball back and forth.
Is it a number, or is it like, is it how does this look in October and November? Right, because I wonder if competitive losses in the fourth quarter would feel different than if they're getting beat the way Arkansas was
Bull
getting
Gators,
beat.
I don't know.
Well, I think again, I mean, the number at the end really matters. Like if you went 5-7 and you played in a bunch of really tight ball games, can you get away with that? I don't know, but if you go 6-6. And you get blown out in a couple, I think you survive that. Like, it just, again, that's why, and I'll continue to say it, that I think this first game with Florida and Miami is literally worth 3 years for both places. And people get shocked when I say that about Miami. But, guys, Mario Cristobal's like 12-13. We're going into year three, and everybody is saying how bad Florida is. If you lose to them, that puts them on a bad trajectory, in my opinion.
Miami is one of those programs. We were talking about it with Don Dunn last week, where you think about the programs that, you know, it was the 80s, 90s, and first half of the 2000s were a different world. Tennessee, we thought, was going to be that way, but they've won some games the last couple of years under Heupel. But programs like Nebraska, and I would think that Miami would fit this mold as well, where it is I believe Miami has one 10-win season in the last 20.
Miami feel like Al Pacino on Donnie Brasco. Like, their prime's behind them. Like, they haven't reached the level that they wanted to coming off of that, and they're just trying to get back, even though, you know, it hadn't happened for a long time. And look, I hope they do. I think it's fascinating when Miami is good, and Cam Ward's a stud. But again, you're going up to Gainesville, and narratives can change on a dime. Can change on a dime in politics. Can change on a dime in sports. So I just I don't know, man. It's put up. And you want to talk about bad losses? Let's talk about Mario Cristobal. I mean, take a knee, dog. Like, it just. I don't know. It's setting up to be a big game.
A win in that ball game could carry them into midseason easily. I mean, on a high.
Either team. I mean, there's a chance Florida could start out really hot and then lose their last five. What happens then?
I've always thought Johnny Depp's character in Donnie Brasco was doing everything possible to scream that he was an undercover police officer without actually telling people.
Such a cop.
The least convincing undercover police officer in the history of movies. But I'm glad, you know, I'm usually the one referencing 90s movies that make people turn to like Wikipedia or IMDb. So I'm glad you could throw on. Hey Jake, watch Gross Point Blank if you've never seen it. That's a good
Gross
one.
Gross Point Blank.
John Cusack movie. You'll get a kick out of it.
Nice. Look, I love old style movies. I was watching Casino the other day.
Oh, the best.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Jake, we're about out of time. Let everybody know what you got going there at Crane & Company.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're knee-deep in college football right now, people. So we broke down. You got ACC Media Days and Big Ten Media Days going on at the same time. We're talking SEC. We're talking Big 12. It's fall camp's about to kick off. So we're talking, you know, everything college football and a little bit more. We're live 2 to 3:30 p.m. Central each weekday. Come find us on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, everywhere that, you know, basically you can find stuff like that. So, yeah, man, come hang out with us.
Great stuff as always, Jake. Thanks again, man. Have a great week.
Y'all too. See ya.
Jake Crane joining us. We need to get to our final break. Back to wrap it up here on the Tuesday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price.